One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Well, it's high time as we approach the almost mythical podcast 5000s to welcome back some of our legends to the Midweek Drive. And of course, one of those greatest legends has to be the former editor of SFX magazine, of course, a great film critic, journalist, a general all-round wonderful soul. It's Richard Edwards. How are you, Richard?
I'm very good, thanks.
Excellent. And it's good to see that in the latest edition of SFX magazine that we see not one but two reviews by yourself, which I want to focus on in terms of this particular thing. One, of course, focusing very much on Obi-Wan Kenobi, and the other one on the perhaps less satisfying version of Buzz Lightyear without Tim Allen vocalizing, of course, Into Infinity and Beyond. So let's go to that one first, if we may, which is kind of echoing what I kind of felt about the whole thing, insofar as there was so much that we were expecting for this whole system. And yet somehow it just didn't quite deliver, did it, really, the full movie?
Yeah, not a brilliant sci-fi movie, unfortunately. I mean, it's a really difficult idea, I think, but I guess a bold idea for Pixar to do a kind of Buzz Lightyear prequel. It's not really about the Buzz Lightyear toy. It's about the film that inspired the toy. And it, you know, just describing it is a little bit mad. But I mean, this is a good way, I guess, of Pixar making a sci-fi movie. And it is a sci-fi movie. You know, it's the ideas in it. I mean, it's a bit like Interstellar, really. This idea of time dilation, and you know, travels faster than the speed of light. Every time he travels back, he's sees everyone else has gone on 4 years. And there's a really brilliant sequence at the beginning of the film where he basically sees his friend age while he's away. And it's like the beginning of Up. It's, you know, it's just a brilliant bit of visual storytelling. But then the rest of the film really can't live up to it. It's just a very standard sort of, you know, sci-fi movie that anyone could have made. And I think Pixar have set the bar so high that, you know, anything that's just okay isn't really good enough. And I think for a character who's as iconic as Buzz Lightyear, it's just a bit of a disappointment.
I mean, to be honest, Richard, I felt pretty much the same as I felt when I saw the Reeves and Mortimer remake of Randall and Hartkirk Deceased. I mean, it had so many possibilities, and in the end, without Annette Andre, frankly, it just was hopeless. You know, this is the key point. Welcome, Annette Andre. Welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hello. Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Well, great to connect with a good self. Obviously, we're currently in a heat wave condition, so that's all nice for that point of view. And as an Australian who obviously spent a lot of time in California and indeed has just returned to the United Kingdom, how are you finding the heat in it?
Well, London's different heat to what you get on the coast in California. You know, most of the time it gets very hot there. But we lived fairly near the coast, so you normally got some sort of a breeze. We were up in a canyon, so, you know, breezes would come in a little bit. Wasn't quite as, but you come into London and everything stops, including the air. And you just sit there in a pool of sweat and hope to goodness you can get the fan going and create some sort of breeze. I keep waking up in the night and saying, because I can't open my windows. I'm on a ground floor. And in London, on a ground floor, it's, you open a window and the burglars say, whoa, have a party. So
appreciate the challenge from that point of view, certainly. Richard, of course, you're over in, if memory serves, the West Country in Bath. So how are you coping with the heat?
It's not too bad, actually. I've got my little office is stays quite cool. It's north facing. The other side of the house is baking, but this bit is just about okay. I don't think we're quite as hot as London in Bath.
No, yeah. Well, London, of course, officially apparently the 17th, or not quite in the top 17 cities of the world, really. So it's obviously having challenges from that point of view. I blame the government, but then again, what the hey? When last we spoke, of course, you clearly sort of demonstrated that you're over in the States. You managed to sort out Donald Trump, so he went. You came back over here literally within, 4 months? You'd actually got rid of our Prime Minister. I mean, this is quality stuff.
Well, you see, you know, I have to be there. If you're in trouble with the politicians, I have to be there.
Yeah.
I wipe them out like that.
It's a key element from that point of view. Richard, let's go back briefly to Toy Story. I don't know, Annette, have you ever seen Toy Story or any of the Pixar related things?
No, I haven't actually. I know of it, but I've never actually seen it. I know that my grandkids watched it. It was years ago. And I didn't get around. I was going to, because people said it's terrific. But I never did get to see it.
Well, it's still available. But I think the point that we were talking about earlier was that somehow this movie, which was sold with so much fanfare, this was about one of the characters in Toy Story that effectively was going to be really wonderful. It's going to show, demonstrate why this was there. And it just didn't work. So really what my question for you initially, Annette, is have you ever had projects where you thought there's been so many things that have been going for this, but it just hasn't quite worked?
Oh, yeah. I mean, quite a lot of the time you get that sort of thing. Don't ask me to name any because my mind goes way back or not, or, you know, it depends where it is at the time. But there have been many times when you've gone in with a, whoa, this is going to be really good. And then somehow or other, it just doesn't meet your criteria. And it's a somewhat of a disappointment. Some occasions, other people have said, oh, I thought that was a great production. It was wonderful. And you think, really? And other times, you might think that, you know, oh, that wasn't that good. I think we all worked really well together and it died a bit. So it's very hard to tell. But no, things like that do happen. And then you can get into something where you're enthusiastic and think it's great. And it is. It just works.
I suppose in many ways that kind of echoes your own experience, Richard, as a critic and as a film critic. I mean, there are moments, I mean, clearly you went into Buzz Lightyear thinking this is going to be great, and yet fundamentally it just seemed to be flawed.
Yeah, it was a big disappointment in that regard. And I think as well, because it's such a front-loaded film, and I think often, you know, because the first act is really good, and I think often a film that closes well, you know, you remember so much better, obviously. I mean, I try and go into films thinking this film is going to be great. And, you know, often it'll start off and you think, yeah, this is brilliant. And then something, it'll drop off for various reasons. But I mean, I think I'm very much from the glass half full school of reviewing. Because I mean, I think there are some people who want films to be bad, but I want everything to be good. And I really wanted the Buzz Lightyear film to be good. Because I think, you know, it's got, as you say, it's got all the ingredients to make a brilliant sci-fi movie. You've got a character, you've got Pixar, who are brilliant. You've got a memorable character. And the way that they did all the production design to sort of hark back to Star Wars and Aliens and all that, you know, everything was in this film's favour. It just didn't quite work.
And if I turn the time back to, let's say, August 2011, SFX magazine, turn to the back of it, we see, of course, Richard Edwards, deputy editor in those days of SFX, with the following words: Buzz Lightyear may not be a flying toy, but he does just about everything else. And indeed, it's a heartfelt scenario in terms of why, in terms of personal recollections of timeless SF, you are a keen fan of Buzz Lightyear, even, as I say, over 11 years ago.
Yes, yeah, no, always loved a bit of Buzz.
Yeah, it's important. So, Annette, share with us from your own point of view something which I wanted to sort of get from both of you at this particular stage. As we head towards our 5,000th podcast, we started these things off back in 2009, and we're approaching our 5,000th one. We've already heard, we'll be hearing from Phil Leonis and Lily Leonis, who have put together a special package from California. What are your most memorable highlights of our transatlantic connections been, Annette Andre?
Whoa, out of the blue, that one comes out. I mean, it's been many years. I've been coming on this for a long time. And I was much younger then. And,
strangely, we all were really, Annette, but never mind.
When this happens, I think in terms of me, I seem to be the only one getting older. There have been some wonderful moments on the programs. I mean, I used to do the talks and things, and some talks were, they just went well. You know, they just worked. And there was a follow-up of conversation afterward, and either laughs or not or whatever, but it was really good. And then there were other times where it was sort of, you thought it might be quite a good talk, and then it was, well, not quite there. Oh, that one. It's, and I can't really say because, not give anything definite on this question, because always there were different guests happening, and it worked a different way back then, before the pandemic, and the way we do it now. So it changes. The podcasts change things. And I used to like that contact with everybody in the studio. I liked that. It gave some sort of impetus. And I like it. I mean, I still enjoy it. It's a different way. And I quite like it when I get to see some of the people that I've known in the past, Phil Lynas and, you know, the various people. I just can't pinpoint.
I think that's perfect, Annette. I mean, it's called improvisation. And I figured, you know, with your acting sort of expertise, there's no way, you know, you easily hold with respect to that. And yes, certainly we are now very much of the Zoom generation, whereby the traditional days of telephone lines and studio voices seem to have actually headed away. Although I must admit, I'm not in the studio at present. So there you go. Richard, what about yourself? Because again, you've, like Annette, visited Lincoln. You've been up here. You've sorted out a few other bits and pieces. What are your own sort of highlights of the connections we've made over the years?
I think maybe it's chatting to you from San Diego for Comic-Con, because I always think that the start of Comic-Con, which actually I think is next week, isn't it? It comes around. First proper one since 2019. And actually, you know, just talking just before it all starts and all kicks off, sort of trying to hear you through the buzz of people wandering around San Diego. kind of exciting times.
Yeah. And who would have thought that spooky connection, you see, they were you reporting on the San Diego Comic-Con, probably just a few miles away from Annette, of course, and Arthur Weingarten, living in San Diego, which is fine. Did you ever wander up to see the San Diego Comic-Con, Annette?
No. I kept well away from that because there I was here in London, one of my trips over. And we were at one of the conference, one of the things we went to, conventions.
Yeah.
That's the word, conventions. And it was a Sunday, and the Comic-Con people came in, they were more or less taking over. And some of us were more or less, we were down to a few. And it was awful, because everyone passed us by. And they went for the comic, because I had nothing to do with any of that. I would love to, but I had never done anything that I would be involved in that. And so we all went away saying, oh, I'm not going to come back again with those Comic-Con people. So I stayed well away from anything to do with Comic-Con.
It's an interesting thing, Richard, because I mean, obviously, as we're gradually sort of stepping back to the kind of pre-pandemic scenarios, as you said, the first post-pandemic Comic-Con that's been taking place, you know, there's always that concern about how do you actually ensure that the talent, like Annette and so on, are kind of kept sort of happy at the same time as obviously the customers, and of course, as Colin Baker sometimes used to refer to them, the great unwashed.
I guess, I mean, that's the thing I guess we all have to be aware of, isn't it? And it's, as always, I think it's a question of respecting people's boundaries, and you know, obviously the part of the economics of a lot of conventions is paying for autographs and meeting celebrities, but maybe it's a case of not throwing your arms around them and giving them a massive hug, which you probably shouldn't do anyway, you know, pandemic or not.
Yeah, no, you need to have personal distance. The one message we actually have to work through that whole system. That's a key classic line of things there. Annette, as we mentioned, Richard has indeed, I think, featured you. Have you not, Richard? You did feature Annette in one in addition of SFX, if memory serves.
I'm sure we have.
Yeah, in terms of SF, yeah. back in the day, back in the
the way that you wheeled out that old issue that I'd written. I mean, your knowledge of SFX is probably better than mine.
Know, it's always important. I could go back to your time at Hot Dog Magazine, but perhaps not. let's sort of turn its head base there. I mean, Annette, going back to obviously the book without which no show with your good self would be complete, of course, the classic Annette André memoir of Where Have I Been All My Life, memoir by Annette André, forward by Sir Roger Moore, appreciation by Kenneth Cope, of course. Were there ever any moments where, given your tremendous connection with Randall and Hotcock Deceased, with all the sort of aspects within that, how do the fans relate to you, Annette? I mean, that's what I'm kind of getting to in terms of that. Is this a case of, do you still get fan mail from the series? Because obviously you can go to BritBox now, you can watch Randall and Hotcock any time of the day or night, 24/7.
Well, I've been a bit lax this year with keeping up on Facebook. And now I'm talking about it. I've said this for the last 3 weeks. Oh, I'm going to start back in, because there have been some messages from people, you know. I thought, I've really got to get back there. And they're lovely. I mean, they ask me questions or about a certain episode or whatever. They make comments about certain things. I have a good relationship with my fans mostly. In fact, pretty much all the time. And I'm very appreciative of them. I mean, we did this back in, it came out in the end of 1967, I think it was, or 68, no, 68, something like that. And it
before
is
before Richard Edwards was born, Annette. I mean, that's the sort of frightening thing.
I know. Oh my God, I told you I was old. Now I've lost a train of thought, and I had a good thought. That was going to be very interesting.
Back to 1968-69, Randall and Hotcock Deceased, it was produced. Yes.
And so we made that, and at the end of it, we were all exhausted, and they said, well, this is the end. We said, oh, good. And there was talk that maybe we'd do a second series, which we would have liked to have done, because we had some good ideas for it. We wanted to punch more comedy into it. And we always fought with the producer about that. But it turns out that the people liked the comedy coming into it. Anyway, it didn't happen. And now we're in 2022. I am still hearing from people and saying, I want to buy the photograph, or I'm buying your book and read it, or, you know, and in the conventions and things, they come up to you and they want to meet you. And I cannot believe that quite a lot of the series from back then were so good that they've come through and still going now, and people still remember. I mean, this is extraordinary, I think. We were truly a golden age of television then. And England was really in the forefront of it.
I mean, Richard, just taking that point further, I mean, clearly, there's an awful lot of product out there now. You've got your Paramount Plus, you've got your Netflix, you've got your Disney Plus, you've got your Apple, all this sort of material is actually there. And yet what Annette said, we still, as I said, BritBox, great source of classic British SF and material, including Randall and Hotcock. Is that something that we sort of still... Because one of the shows we do, as you know, Richard, is Resonance Rewind, where we invite sort of people in their 20s and 30s to share what for them will be a first-time viewing. Jessica Burtis being a good example of somebody who works through that. Is there something that's sort of magical about that? Because I can't seem to recall in the 70s or so, I mean, we'd look back at things like Metropolis, we'd look back at Things to Come, etc. But there still didn't seem to be that kind of notion that this was really connecting with us.
I think a big thing about, if you went back, go back in time a bit, is that everybody was watching stuff at the same time and there wasn't so much choice of things. So if there was a hit show, everybody would watch it. And, you know, they would talk about it at school, at work the next day. Now, you've, as well as your TV channels, you've got everybody watching on streaming. And, you know, it's not just the fact that there's lots of sort of sources. There's no sort of time restriction on when you watch anything. So say someone's binging Stranger Things, someone might do it in a day. Someone else might spend a month to do it. So they can't talk to each other about because of spoilers. So it's just a very, very different environment. I mean, there are still shows that can have that water cooler effect. I mean, look at Bodyguard a few years ago, the Jed Mercurio show with Keely Hawes, that, you know, people were watching it on a Sunday night and desperate to find out what happened next. But it's a lot harder to do now, I think. And, you know, I think a lot of shows that came out in the 60s, there was some really great ideas. There was lots of memorable stuff. You know, just really cool hooks that really, really, and, you know, they're just good dramas that kind of just stuck with people.
I also think, Richard, that it was a time of enormous change in terms of, because I was part of a group of people who went to promote a book of photographs, and they tied up with the fashion thing. And we went to America and did a round America trip promoting a thing. And our wardrobe that they made for us, because it had started in England, all the mini skirts, the long hair, the boots, all of that. We went to America and we introduced the mini skirt. We were on Ed Sullivan, all in mini skirts. We went around in different places where people look horrified because in America you didn't do that sort of thing, particularly in the street. I mean, someone said to us once, "You're going to a fancy dress party?" And we said, "No, we're going to dinner." And they were rooted to the spot. But it was an enormous change. It was a change for women and their role in society, because even through the 50s, women were still... You got married, you had children, you looked after the house, the husband did everything else, getting a little better. But we sort of came out, I say we because it was part of it. We came out and threw off our bras and wore this and that and the other and said, we have a place in this world. This is us, we're women. And we're going, girls who started their own businesses, which was unheard of. You know, Mary Quant comes out. What she's doing in business, and she's successful. All of that went on. And it was a vast change. The music changed, the fashions changed, the guys wearing long hair and all of that, and flared trousers and colored shirts. I mean, particularly in England, this wasn't heard of. In America, even less. And I think it just struck a note. I think it brought out a lot more ideas, creativity in our business anyway. And there was care. There was care about the production. And people, I still get people telling me, oh, I just loved your clothes in those things, in The Saint or Randall and Hopkirk or whatever. And it was true. I mean, we had wonderful clothes and they looked... Now, all the women wear black and either they're in black skirts and a black top or they're in leggings and, you know, whatever. And there's very little, I can't say no, but there's very little colour that you see in a lot of these things now. And a lot of similarity. I'm being a bit hard because there are some wonderful series. I absolutely appreciate that. But there are an awful lot which are absolutely samey and they just go on in the same pattern because they keep needing material. and you run out of ideas. I mean, you're absolutely right when you say we were centered on, we had a box of what we could watch. We weren't listening to YouTube, watching YouTube, listening to tweets, doing this, doing that, and having people become famous on YouTube. You know, it was, we still went up for auditions and we had to show things anyway. I don't want to be a critic. No, you have a point there, that we did live in a time when it was centered on these things, and so gave us a life.
And it's interesting, of course, the resonance that we've actually had from that, because clearly there are five series based on Star Trek that have been developed and produced of varying degrees of success. They're still thriving on that basis. George Lucas, of course, Star Wars in the 1970s opposed to the 1960s, still very much echoing back to Obi-Wan Kenobi, of course, Richard. And there are sort of moments that really tend to get the cultural zeitgeist and really move on from the music of the Beatles, Paul McCartney, of course, playing at Glastonbury this year and so on. We hear, obviously, Tom Jones still around there. I mean, Rich, do you think that's something that will perpetually echo through the system, or do we often need to say, well, what are we doing for our own 21st century generation in terms of, I mean, you've got a young child, what are your thoughts and hopes for her as she goes through the system, or will it be a case of, no, she must watch Toy Story, it's an essential part of her upbringing?
That's a really good question. I think there are some things like Toy Story that are just fantastic. I think, you know, Toy Story, I don't think is ever going to go away, because it's like Star Wars. You know, Star Wars hasn't really dated the original movies. I mean, yeah, the effects are kind, you know, there are some things that got better effects, but it feels completely out of time. You know, it does its own thing. And I think Toy Story is very similar in that regard. You know, fantastic films will stay fantastic films. I think there is a slight difference now, though, that Hollywood has realized that nostalgia is its big business. You know, the if you look at the big franchises now, you know, Star Wars, Disney Plus keeps going back to Star Wars. You know, Marvel, you know, we're talking about characters based on comics that started in the early 60s. You know, Paramount Plus, which is just, you know, that's basically a Star Trek channel. You know, these are all old franchises. They're franchises that I love, but they are crowding out new stuff, and you kind of have the occasional thing that will break through, like look at Stranger Things. But then Stranger Things, the irony is that it's a show based on 80s nostalgia, and at some point we've got to sort of keep making new stuff. You know, Star Wars didn't become the biggest movie of its era because it was harking back to Forbidden Planet or anything. It did it because it was new, and sooner or later you're going to, you know, you run out of, everything gets old eventually. And I think, you know, we may be starting to see that with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that, you know, up to the Avengers Endgame, it was almost like they could do no wrong. But, you know, since then, we've had a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies. It is a multiverse, but can our minds handle a multiverse? You know, it's, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in there that's been, you know, decent, but not brilliant. And, you know, sooner or later it comes to a point that you've just got to do, you need something new. And it's, I think it's very difficult at the moment for anything that is new to get any oxygen, whether it's on TV or at the movies.
Well, Annette, you're well aware that I'm pushing very solidly for a return to Randall and Hopkirk Deceased, in which you as Jeannie Hopkirk take on the senior role in what we will refer to as a dramedy, a kind of dramatic comedy, really, a dramedy, which actually sort of could actually take the whole thing in a whole direction. And with CGI, surely there's no reason why we can't have some of the original characters re-emerging.
What's CGI?
Computer-generated imagery, but I'm pleased you asked. It's what kind of gives us all the sort of images and packages that come through in oh so many ways, and enables us to have endless amounts of fun, including changing your particular, or even having a very scary image. And if you're looking for a very scary image, that's probably the scariest image that I could ever actually come up with.
Oh, man.
You know, it's shocking, and it's just unfortunate in so many ways, but it's a very scary image. And indeed, who knows what could actually happen with that. For those people who are traditionally listening to this via radio, I've just put an image of, I can't say former prime ministers yet, but currently on his way out, shall we say, wearing an England shirt. And Richard's almost collapsed with shock of the whole thing, really. So
yeah, you need to give people more warning if you're going to do something like that.
It's problematic, but it's all CGI. It all adds to the whole sort of system, and it kind of interacts in so many ways. But which, of course, Richard, that's another thing. Back in the day, a lot of the series would actually use their own special effects, and this was where Pixar kind of took it to a whole new level in terms of reality and images.
Well, they have. I mean, it was one of those. Toy Story was the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs of the computer age. You know. No, did anyone really think that you could make a full-length computer animated movie? You know, Pixar went and did it, and you know the animation looks a bit basic now in some regards, but they were very clever in using toys as their main characters. You know that they don't have skin; they have hard edges, and also the animation is so good that the characters still feel alive, you know, the same way that Wallace and Gromit, you know, they're clearly made of plasticine, but they're animated so beautifully that you feel like they're living, breathing people, dogs or whatever. And that's what Pixar have always done, you know, that they've got this technological backing and they bring in this, you know, that they perfect doing water, they perfect doing fur, they do these amazing space sequences. But ultimately, they are a company driven by storytelling. It doesn't always work, as you know, Lightyear sort of proves. Well, but you know, that is fundamentally, they have been a success because they tell stories well,
and it all goes down to the story, which is one of the reasons why later in the year we will be hopefully having the first recipient of the official Arthur Weingarten Trophy for best contributor to the Midweek Drive, which I know we'll speak about Annette and talk a little bit more in terms of time. Coming up, we'll be listening to one of our Tipperary tales from Tipperary correspondent and writer Jenny Finch. But musically speaking, Annette, are you still into bebop music and such like? What are your kind of, if I was to say, choose your favourite musical artist as a bridge now, who would you go for? Or what track would you go for?
Well, I still love doo-wop and I still love Sha-na-na. And I have Alexa now. My daughter set me up with Alexa. Oh, God forbid. But anyway, I speak to this thing every now and again. Alexa, please turn on. This morning it was Bing Crosby. Oh, she's turning it on.
No. Exactly. You see, this is, welcome to the 21st century. It's outrageous. So never mind. Which Bing Crosby number did you go for?
Oh, she played quite a few. And if you start being specific, then she's all right in some things, but if you start being specific about a song, quite often you just get a whole lot of rabbit stuff going on, you know. So yeah, but it's quite fun. You can just sort of shout from the other side of the room. I won't. Alexa. It'd be terrible if you lived with someone called that, wouldn't it?
The number of times that actually it's accidentally triggered off the system just by saying those words, who knows what could actually happen? Alexa, play this, etc. It's a strange world, but still, never mind.
I asked her to play Vera Lynn. I love Vera Lynn. And there is a song there that I often ask for, but she never finds it.
And what is that song, Annette?
Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
On a wing and a prayer, we'll make sure that's that could have summed up the last 5,000 podcasts and indeed the sort of 15 or so years before then, basically. So
it was based on a real story.
Yeah. the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer. What a show!
What a show!
What a fight! Yes, we really hit our target for tonight.
Story of that.
I share with us, Annette. I mean, I have heard it, but Richard might not have. So go carry on.
A World War II pilot. He was a really ace pilot. And they were coming in from a mission. And his wing, one of the wings went, and the engine cut out, and then the other wing went. And he managed to bring it in. And so a song started about it, coming in on a, that's what he said over the radio, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Precisely. It could almost be the line from a classic Powell Pressburger movie entitled, of course, A Matter of Life and Death, which again is a great from times past, but still it opens up a whole thing. And Richard, any musical treat for yourself that you'd like us to dig out?
There's a question. I was just listening to some REM. So how about the cheeriest song about the end of the world, the end of the world as we know it, and I Feel Fine.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an aeroplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world. Serve its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up an ox. Speak grunt. No strength. Clatter with fear, fight down high. Choir and a fire representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Let the West coming in a hurry with the Furies breathing down your neck. Team my team reporters babble Trump, tether crop. Look at that, no plane, fine, then. Uh-oh, overflow, population comment boom, but it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself, world serves its own needs. Listen to your heartbeat, dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right. Right, you patriotic, patriotic, slam, fight, bright light. Feeling pretty sight. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine. 6 o'clock, TV hour, don't get caught in foreign tower. Slash and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Lock it in, uniform and book, burning blood, letting every motive escalate. Automotive centering, light a candle, light a motor, step down. Watching heel crush, crush, uh-oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steering clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, it's tradition. We'll go through those last two questions. And Andre, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer on the program today?
I've had a wonderfully interesting. It was lovely to meet Richard Edwards.
Well, very nice to meet you as well.
There you go. I'm not sure whether I think this is a first, actually. First time we've connected together. Yeah. So, Richard, has it been good for you?
It's been lovely. Yeah, lovely to come back on again.
Splendid. You can, of course, still get copies of Where Have I Been All My Life, a memoir by Annette Andre. Even online, you can ask Alexa to order the hard copy for you, and it'll do that as well. It's amazing. That's great stuff. And Richard, how can people follow through if they're not avid subscribers to SFX magazine? Where they say, where's the Richard Edwards piece? This is what we need to know. Where's Taryn Bennett's, etc., or Tara Bennett's piece? Richard, how can people follow your current work?
Well, I'm writing for SFX, Total Film, Games Radar, Tech Radar. So there's usually a bit of sort of science fiction stuff going on. So I'm around.
Absolutely. And are the podcasts still going on from your own point of view?
Robbie the Robot's Waiting is on hiatus, but will return. So yes, yeah, like coming out of lockdown, you kind of oh gosh, we've got to fit everything else in as well. But we are intending to bring him back.
It works for that. And Annette, will you return to the Madrid Drive?
I certainly will. I'd hate it if you didn't ask me.
We'll certainly gear that up for August. And Richard, will you come back too?
I'd love to. Thank you.
Hello, this is your friend in podcasting, Phil Lernis, and I'm sitting beside my wife, renowned performer Lily Holloman, who's actually standing.
Yes, and sometimes casually I go by Lily Lernis.
Well, this was my first question for you. You have been increasingly going by your married name, Lily Holloman Lernis, or Lily Lernis. As a performer, you continue to go by Lily Holloman. What do you prefer me to call you?
Ma'am.
Well, ma'am, we're here for a very august occasion. Alex Lefchuk is celebrating 5,000 podcasts.
Oh, my goodness.
A couple of caveats. I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know if it's 5,000 podcasts for Siren FM, if it's 5,000 podcasts for Southside Broadcasting. I don't know if some of those 5,000 are just podcasts he's listened to.
Oh.
But it's a big number.
Yes, it is a huge number.
Yeah. I mean, another caveat, I don't know how the numbers translate from country to country. So 5,000 British podcasts might be like 50 shows here in America. We don't know.
What is the exchange rate on podcasts?
I don't know. More than it should be. And I don't even know what I mean by that. So do you know Alex Lefchuk?
I know him by sound, but I can't wait to meet him in the flesh.
That was really disturbing.
I tend to sometimes be disturbing accidentally.
Yeah, it sounded like you have some nefarious plans in mind. Some Vincent Price horror movie from the early 70s or 60s came to mind.
Indeed.
But enough about you. Let's talk about Alex. What do you think he thinks of my work on the show?
I think Alex loves your work, and he's always so effusive. But what I would say about Alex is ebullient and so much fun and a community builder and huge heart.
And certainly seems to be too young to have done 5,000 podcasts.
Well,
right?
Again, we don't know with inflation what that means.
Right. But let me put it this way. The show certainly doesn't look a day over 4,000.
Definitely not.
And it's time now on Southside Broadcasting, of course, for another fabulous Tipperary tale. Also, of course, for Siren Radio and The Midroot Drive. Take it away, Jenny Finch.
Hello, everybody. This episode is from November 2021. This week has seen radical changes in the land around the house. Fergus, the tree surgeon, arrived on Wednesday with some frightening machinery, and along with Tom and Robbie, set to, making the road and parts of the wood safe again. There have been high winds even this early in winter, and several of the trees have begun to lean dangerously. Across the road, the trees arched over and were banging on the roof of the Majestic. It was a job for the professionals, and they did us proud. Before Fergus tackled the wood, I had a discussion about the other residents. On Sunday, I went out to call the dogs last thing at night. A large bird swooped over the wall from the wood, gliding silently straight towards me. I've never seen a barn owl in the wild before, and certainly never that close. I think it was partially blinded by the security light, as it was only 10 feet away when it blinked and veered off abruptly. I stood for a moment, open-mouthed and filled with wonder. I was fairly sure it was nesting in the wood and concerned we might disturb it, or worse, destroy the nest. Fergus cut the falling tree with extraordinary care, located the nest, and made the remainder safe. He even left part of the high trunk to make a perch for the owls. Off to one side, we have a badger's set. Actually, more like a badger's mansion, I think. It has several entrances, a flat area where they pull out bedding to dry in the morning, and a walkway across the top, now catching some sun. We had thought to carve a seat from the fallen log, but now we'll leave it alone so they can live in peace. Well, that's owl and badger. Ratty we've been tussling with for months, and as long as he stays away from the house, we are happy. Sadly, mole, or one of them, met a sticky end a few weeks ago. I found a tiny corpse by the back door, perhaps an offering from the same animal that left a field mouse by the front door last month. We had a host of frogs and small toads in the spring and through the summer. They got into the garden, and we were very careful cutting the grass, giving them time to hop away. And the first animal we saw was a weasel, strutting through the garden one evening. Quite a cast, I think, and fit for a book. We have let the garden go for a while, and the grass was way out of control. Jackie is forbidden to use the strimmer or mower, and I have no shoulder ligaments left, so can't do much. Enter Des, one of our neighbours. He got the grass down, piled out to compost it in the wood, and tackled the feral dogwood too. Much to our surprise, we found a small stone boundary deep in the hedge. The dogwood had broken through and was several feet past it, rooting into the gravel of the drive. It looks rather ragged at the moment, but Des assures us it will grow back thicker and can be shaped next year. Both Fergus and Des are very knowledgeable and have expertise and ideas for the wood. We all agree the ash, over half the trees, has to go. It is heartbreaking ripping the centre out of the wood, but we are making plans to build back. As the land slopes, the rain tends to gather at the roadside, and this isn't good for many trees. We do have some willows there, however, and I fancy putting a double line along that boundary to dry the land a little and act as a natural barrier if the road floods. Fergus showed me how to take cuttings so we can plant from our own trees. I'm looking forward to that this winter. As well as willow, we're looking at oaks, my favourite, birch, a couple of Douglas firs, and sycamore, of course. In the middle, we hope to make a centrepiece with Canadian maple copper beech, and fruit and nut trees, mainly for the birds. It will give the wood a new heart and add a lot of colour and different shapes. I read a saying recently, "He who plants trees knowing he will never sit in their shade has begun to understand the planet." We won't see the wood come to its full glory, but we will make a start and hope others will treasure and nurture it. So here's to the planet and living in the wind in the willows. I think it's obvious that life here in Ireland is very different from life in the UK. While some things stay the same, lots of almost familiar forms, daylight saving time, TV licenses, the basic structure is very different. For the first time, we are personally responsible for most of our services. There is no council tax, just a much smaller land tax paid each year, 12% of the UK tax on our old house. But, there's always a but, no lighting, no council rubbish collection, no mains drainage or water, no gas network. This is the case in many urban as well as rural areas. Finding out how to obtain and manage all of this really focuses the mind. I've become far more aware of what I use and what I throw away, especially what I throw away. Yes, the rubbish bin's fast rumbles on, and we're having to find new ways to handle it ourselves. When I filled a bag with mixed rubbish and remembered there was no handy bin, I had to stop and consider what the hell I was going to do. Try it for yourselves. Peer into your kitchen bin and think, what am I going to do with all this? We already recycle a lot, but that collection ended too. So now we are finding new solutions for our reusables. A new coal bunker in the wood is for grass cuttings and compostable food waste. We chose a coal bunker as it's rat-proof. Almost all plastic bags are combustible here now, so we can just chuck the whole lot in. Glass and tins go to the banks outside shops. There's a lot of cardboard, but we have a lot of land. It goes outside to deter weeds, encourage earthworms, and hopefully rot down. The big problem is plastic. We can burn small amounts, but would prefer not to have to. And then Jackie remembered the big counter in Tesco. "Recycle all your hard and soft plastics here," it says. So we're going to remove all the plastic bags at source and put veggies and fruit into nylon bags. Empty plastic bottles and clean food trays will be returned and slipped in each week. I don't know if that's allowed. I'm sure someone will tell us in the next few weeks. That leaves polystyrene packing from large items, bubble wrap, and larger plastic sheets. Still musing on that. Dealing with each item makes you very aware of just how much waste there is, despite all our efforts to cut it down. The solar panels should be installed next week, and we will see a big drop in the electricity bills. Currently, almost 45% of the power goes to the pump, mainly to supply the farm. When we have flow meters installed, I'll be able to calculate exactly how much. Oh, I'm going to have fun with my little calculator. And we can finally dispense with the butt-ugly pump house and its dangerously frail electricity supply. There have been some misgivings over putting our water supply in the hands of a solar system. Ireland is always cited as a dark, cold and wet place after all. Well, there are storage batteries built into the system for stormy days, and the panels don't need sun, just light. It's certainly wet here in the winter, though not continuously. Many days there are fierce little squalls that rush down the road. I can hear them coming and reckon I have about 30 seconds to get inside. That is hard-earned knowledge from last year, believe me. After they pass, however, there may be a longer patch of sunlight complete with rainbows before the next hits. Of course, there are what the Irish call dirty days. The Italians have a lovely description for this type of rain. They call it bagnata gli contadini, which means soaking the peasants. On such days, this peasant lights the fire and hunkers down in the snug, relying on the batteries to run the pump. So the end of the post was mainly about rubbish. Even if we do manage to persuade our providers to resume service, I think we will be far more efficient in our consumption. This has been a hard but good lesson in how to do our own small bit towards preserving the planet. And so, in a strange way, I'm almost grateful. Almost. I still have all that damn bubble wrap in my room and no idea what to do with it.
Use it as a stress reliever. Use it as a stress reliever, they shout. Clearly, bubble wrap is what you have to do. Just pop that bubble wrap to cope with the stresses and strains of changing prime ministers and so on and so forth.
And when you popped it, what do you do with it?
Well, there's always a question. I thought you were going to take us down the line of mystical, magical, Harry Potter-like things with the owl, but obviously decided to step away from that and go into sustainability. But there you are. Going well then, Jenny? I mean, now, obviously, several months on from when that was written, presumably things are in place. And you say electricity costs. What electricity costs?
Actually, yes, we had the system jiggled, so it now puts electricity into the house on a sunny day, which is rather good. The electricity costs have come crashing down in spite of the increase in prices. So we're very happy with it. I can recommend it, really.
And for the benefit of the listener in, shall we say, Britain, who might be saying, well, that sounds ideal, basically. 12% of council tax, we'll reduce that, etc. But of course, there is that slight problem insofar as all of the other infrastructure that we tend to take for granted because we pay such extortionate council tax fees wouldn't be there.
That's right. We have nothing. Nothing at all.
Back again with another Tipperary tale in the not-too-distant future.
I look forward to it. That will be lovely, Alex. Thank you.